Wikipedia is the best thing ever. Anyone in the world can write anything they want about any subject. So you know you are getting the best possible information.
We're in a series called First Order Questions, and today we're asking an important question. What is truth? And maybe Michael Scott needed to ask that question as he browsed through Wikipedia. It really is a great tool, but there's the famous saying that says just because it's on the internet doesn't mean that it's true. Not everything you read on the internet is the truth, and that's an important reminder. So what is truth? This is something that we struggle with, especially these days, because we live in a world where oftentimes we say, well, you have your truth, I have my truth, you do what you want, I do what I want, you do you, I'll do me, and as long as it's not hurting anybody, that's okay, right? And we do that, but I think that maybe Jesus would point us to something that's actually a lot more satisfying. But this is the world that we live in. In fact, the Oxford English Dictionary within the last decade called this the word of the year. It's post-truth. And it's kind of ironic that this was the word of the year and it's post-truth because it's actually two words put together, so it's kind of a false word. But anyway, post-truth is relating to or denoting circumstances in which objective facts are less influential in shaping public opinion than appeals to emotion and personal belief. So post-truth means that the truth depends on you. The truth depends on me. Whereas an objective and absolute truth means that I depend on the truth for life. And this is not only unhealthy for physical life. It's unhealthy for physical life because if I am a human being, I depend on the truth that I need water. And I can't just say, I don't feel like drinking water this week. I won't survive. I need it. So of course it's physically dangerous, but it's also toxic. Because if truth is only dependent on our emotions or how we feel, the truth becomes intertwined and connected to our emotions and how we feel. And what happens when anybody questions your feelings or your emotions? It doesn't just feel like they're questioning maybe what might be out there in the world. It feels like they're attacking me. They're questioning my experiences. They're questioning my feelings. They're questioning my emotions. And so instead of having honest conversations that ask all sorts of questions, we instead fight with one another. We get polarized. We see anybody who objects to what I define as truth as the enemy, as a threat, as dangerous. And it's created an unhealthy and polarized world that we're living in, a post-truth world. And maybe this is why Jesus is so controversial. Because in John 14:6, Jesus says, no, there is an objective truth. There's an absolute truth. Not something that depends on you, but instead something that your entire life depends on. He says, I am the way, I am the truth, and I am the life. Jesus is saying there is an objective truth. And sometimes this is the most difficult part about Christianity for people. And it's the most difficult part because we think that truth has to do with harshness and love has to do with kindness, and you just can't possibly mix the two. Because if I want to be loving to you, I just have to let you do whatever it is that you want. And if I want to be loving to you, I have to tell you that whatever it is that you think about this world is okay. But my goodness, I also kind of want to tell you the truth because I care about you and I don't want you to fall into bad things. But if I'm going to tell you the truth, I'm just going to come across as harsh. And you're not going to want to have a relationship with me. And this is where it can be difficult to be a Christian sometimes. Because you hear Jesus say, I'm the way, I'm the truth, and I'm the life. And you see this character who is ultimately loving, but he also tells the truth. How does he do it? Well, in the book of John, John is obsessed with truth, and he's obsessed with this Jesus character who is full of love. And how does this work? How can this operate? In the Psalms, there is this beautiful psalm that says that truth and love have kissed, and it's a prophecy about Jesus. Well, John starts his book in the book of John, the gospel according to John, with this. He says, in the beginning, the word already existed. Now, what John uses for the word in the biblical Greek is logos. Could you say it? Logos. Now, logos is the universal truth. It was a philosophical word. It is the meaning behind the universe. It is the truth of the universe that all human life depends upon. And John is saying, in the beginning, there was a truth. There was a universal truth. Behind the universe, there is something that gave life to everything. The Word already existed. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. He existed in the beginning with God. God created everything through him. Nothing was created except through him. The Word gave life to everything that was created, and his life brought light to everything. As he keeps on saying the Word and talking about what the Word is doing, it makes sense. It's this philosophically loaded word that talks about truth. Nothing can exist without this truth. All of life depends on this truth. In the same way that human beings depend on food and water to survive, the universe depends on this logos, this word. But then he says the word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We've seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. Perhaps you could say full of love and truth. John is saying that Jesus is the logos. Jesus is the truth. He is not just deeply in line with the truth. Jesus actually is the embodiment of truth. He is truth. Now, this makes sense when we see the life of Jesus and how he interacts with other people, especially when he's talking about truth. When we talk about truth with people, we fight because we're obsessed with making sure I get my point about truth across. And we see truth as a debate to win. But with Jesus, that was never the case. Do you notice how calm Jesus is when he talks about truth in the Bible? Do you notice how he never gets defensive? Why? Because he's not just deeply in line with truth. He is truth. He knows it. He's secure, so he doesn't have to get defensive. We most often get defensive about things that we're insecure about. And so if you find yourself in a fight with somebody about truth, maybe it's because you're not super secure about what you believe truth is. I know that I do this a lot. Jesus doesn't have to defend truth because he just reveals truth. It's who he is. It's what he does. So again, let's ask that question. Am I secure enough in the truth that when I have a conversation with somebody, I can still love them? To where I'm not harsh, to where it's really loving and life-giving. If not, it's probably more about my insecurity about the truth than what I see in the other person. Jesus doesn't have to defend the truth. Instead, he reveals the truth. And what is he revealing when he reveals the truth? Well, of course, he's revealing himself, but what is it that he wants us to see in himself? One more time, John chapter 14, verse 6, I am the way, I am the truth, and I am the life. The truth is not just a set of facts that we have to know, but instead, John is saying about Jesus, and Jesus is saying about himself, the truth is not just a list of things that you need to know about life in order to survive. The truth is a person. And Jesus is telling us the truth is a person that we follow for life. In the same way that if there is an absolute, objective truth, human beings depend on it to survive. Jesus is saying, I am that truth. Without me, you can't live. You cannot survive. And because he loves us, he's willing to tell that to us. But because he's so secure in that, he doesn't let getting the truth and getting it out get in the way of loving. He's able to do both. Jesus is having a conversation in John chapter 8 with some people that sometimes we modern readers think Jesus like hates these people. It's the teachers of religious law. It's Pharisees, it's Sadducees, it's people who are experts in the ancient Jewish tradition, and they definitely didn't like Jesus. They certainly saw Jesus as an enemy and as an opponent. And sometimes we think, well, if they made Jesus an enemy, Jesus clearly hated them too. But read how he talks to the Pharisees. Is he blunt with them? Absolutely. But only in ways that they understand, because they're experts on this stuff. He has very high-level conversation with them. And look what he says to them right here. He says, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Again, this is totally shocking for Jesus to say this to this group of people. Now, he's compelling them. He's loving them. He wants them to see something. He wants them to see life. He's not defending something. He's revealing something. But he is telling these people, you need to learn the truth. And he's telling it to the most educated people in his community. No wonder the Pharisees responded, the religious teachers responded, but we're descendants of Abraham. We've never been slaves to anyone. Now, this is kind of funny, isn't it? Don't get me wrong. In the Bible, throughout the Old Testament, God says about his people, I love you, I will redeem you, and he continues to show up for them, and he continues to free them, and he continues to save them. But have the Pharisees forgotten? Have the teachers of religious law, who have memorized the Old Testament, forgotten about Egypt? Have they forgotten that God had to free them through Moses? That God had to split the Red Sea so that they would be free from Egypt? Where they were enslaved for 400 years? Have they forgotten about Babylon, where they were enslaved again? Have they forgotten about their current community that is living under the rule of Rome, and Rome is not enslaving them necessarily legally in some ways, but they are certainly enslaving them with the way that they are taxing the Jewish people? Have they completely forgotten? The Pharisees, the teachers of religious law, they find themselves in a very dangerous place because they know stuff, right? They know enough to be aware of a certain environment, but they don't know enough to know that they don't know a lot. Have you ever been in this place before? Where you know enough about something where you can kind of start to speak into it? You can maybe even start to partake in it, but you don't know enough to realize maybe how silly you look when you're talking about it or when you're doing it. I told you a few months ago that I started weight training for the sake of strength training for injury prevention. And I want you to know, I'm still doing it. Very excited. And I also want you to know this. My squat is up to 135 pounds. If you don't lift weights, I would like to tell you this. Everyone in the gym squats more than me. Every single person. There are freshmen in high school in the squat rack next to me, and they're squatting more than me. Their voices haven't dropped. I'm like, hey, nice squat. And they're like, yeah, thanks, appreciate it. I'm like, oh. You know, it's better. Is that your warm-up? I'm like, yeah. I'll come back in a few hours, right? But I'm actually kind of excited about it. I also told you a couple of weeks ago I was in Denmark. And when I was in Denmark, the conference that I was speaking at, it was at this like arena that also had this gym. And it was a really cool gym, and there was a lot of people who were lifting. And I'm like, oh, perfect. I'm going to go strength train for injury prevention. So I walk in there, and I'm all excited. And it's like super community-based in their gyms. Everybody is talking to everyone. They're super social. And so some guy comes up to me, he's like, hey, what are you going to be doing today? I'm like, oh, well, I'm going to be squatting. He's like, oh, okay, cool. Let's go over there. Let's go ahead and get set up. He goes, all right, how much do you want on the rack? I'm like, and I'm kind of embarrassed, but I'm like, 135. And he goes, wow. And I'm like, I mean, yeah. I'm an athlete. He's like, 135. I'm like, yeah. He's like, you just want to start there? I'm like, can you believe it? Yeah, I do. So I completely forgot that in Denmark, their weights aren't measured by pounds. Their weights are measured by kilograms. Do you know how much 135 kilograms is? 300 pounds. And I had a choice to make. Tell the truth about how little I actually knew, or die. Like, just die. The truth is I had lots of confidence, but confidence most definitely does not mean competence. I can run on a treadmill pretty fast, okay? That's something I'm very confident and competent in, but weightlifting-wise, I looked like that guy under a squat rack. It was not good, and I needed to tell the truth. Like, maybe I actually don't know everything about this. Think about this in your life. When you think about the people that you're frustrated with, why are you so frustrated with them? What story are you telling yourself? What's the little bit of truth that you know about them that you have allowed to define their entire story? Do you get really frustrated with your coworkers? Do you get really frustrated with your friends? Do you get really frustrated with your family? Odds are, if you are starting to be tempted to think, well, that person is just defined by this, and I just don't like that person anymore. Odds are, you probably know enough about their story to realize, like, they're a human being. You know a few things about them, but you look silly. You look really silly, and so do I when I do this. Because I'm speaking about this little tiny itty-bitty piece of truth that I know about this person when this person has way more about them than I can possibly imagine. And I think when Jesus is having conversations with people, he sees the full picture. But interestingly, when he's talking to people, sometimes they get frustrated, and sometimes we get frustrated when we read the Word of God, because I'm like, well, I see this much. I know enough to be dangerous, and it's dangerous because I don't know this much. Sometimes we get excited because we start to learn a little bit, and we can jump to all sorts of conclusions, but what's really important is when we start to realize, well, maybe what I really know and what's really life-changing is that I'm starting to realize how much I don't know. I need the truth. And the truth is that while I know a little bit of things, a lot of my life sometimes is rooted in a lie. And when our life is rooted in a lie, it means that it is rooted in the opposite of Jesus. And what did Jesus say he was? He says, I'm life. I'm freedom. I'm the truth. The truth will set you free. And we tell ourselves, what do I need to be set free from? What do I need? And we fall into all sorts of true lies about truth. Do you remember that movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger back in like the 90s? Like, True Lies. I can't think of a single line right now, so I'm not even going to try. But True Lies, what is it? I think that I'm living in the truth. I think that I'm experiencing freedom, but I'm not. And we think that we are, and we disguise it sometimes and saying, like, well, freedom is just doing whatever I want to do. And Paul says this in Romans chapter 7, I want to do what is good, but I don't. I don't want to do what is wrong, but I do it anyway. We have these conflicting desires. We have these issues. I want to do something. I want to do whatever I want, but if I do whatever I want, it's no longer good for my physical safety. People say, just do you. Just do whatever you want, as long as it's not hurting anybody. But it's like, tell that to Ariel when she's singing, like, part of your world. She can't be a fish anymore if she's going to be a part of our world. And the truth is that the reality that we live in, the freedom that Jesus wants for us, is like water to a fish. It's not something that we're creating. It's something that we belong to. We belong to freedom. We belong to the truth. We're not creating it. We're not defining it. There are certain constraints. There are certain rules to the universe that it is not taking life away from us, but it actually allows for life. We lie to ourselves when we tell ourselves that freedom is doing whatever I want. Freedom is not doing whatever I want. Freedom is having the ability and having the awareness to choose something that actually gives life to me, even if it is restraining, even if it has some rules. That is the truth about freedom. Another true lie that sometimes we live by is that the majority is the truth. Well, if everybody's thinking it, if we've agreed as a collective society that this is what we're going to do, then that's got to be the truth. Majority decides. But come on, look at some of the biggest mistakes that humans have made throughout history. People used to justify slavery. Scientifically, people used to think that the earth was flat. We used to think all sorts of different things where it's like, you know, I think the majority was wrong about that. Who's the only one who's not wrong? Who's the only one who doesn't have to cover up their past mistakes? Who's the only one who can be a completely open book, totally unafraid for the entire universe to see because he hasn't had to self-correct? Hebrews chapter 13 tells us Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. So do not be attracted by strange new ideas. Your strength comes from God's grace. I think it's important to remember that last part. Majority does not decide what is true and what is right and what is freedom. Jesus Christ decides what is true and what is right and what is freedom. Not just because he's in line with truth, but because he embodies truth. He knows what's right. He knows what's good. He knows what's true. He knows what's free. And it is important that we follow him if we want to go into a place of life and into a place of freedom. But it is so good that our strength comes from God's grace, which means my strength, my ability to live, does not actually depend on my ability to follow Jesus. It depends on what's true about how he feels about me, but what he thinks about me, about what he sees when he sees me. And what does he see? He sees a person that he loves. He sees a person that he will give his grace to. So no, we don't get the truth right all the time. So often, sometimes it feels like we get the truth wrong more than we get it right. Good thing for God's grace. Because yes, he's never made a mistake. Because yes, he's always been consistent. Because yes, he knows what is right. And yes, he knows what is wrong. And yes, this is incredibly convicting for us as people. And it makes us feel really uncomfortable. But how can we reconcile looking in the face of a God who knows what's right and who knows what's wrong? And we look back at him and we know, I've done what's wrong. I've hurt you and I've hurt creation and I've hurt the people around me. His grace is the only answer. His grace is the only way. Majority is not truth. God is truth. We don't create the truth. We belong to truth, but this is true about God, which means it's true about you. You get grace. He gives us his grace. The third true lie that we fall into is that truth is just knowledge. And this is where truth is, again, it's not just facts, but it is so satisfying because it's personal. Truth is not just knowledge. John chapter 8, verse 31, Jesus said, you are truly my disciples if you remain faithful to my teachings. It's relational. Stay with me. Remain with me. Hang out with me, Jesus says. I want you to be with me. I want you in freedom. One more time, John chapter 8, verse 32, what did Jesus say? He said, very truly I tell you, everyone who sins is a slave to sin, and he just doesn't want that for us. I want you to be in relationship with me, not so that he can control us. He's not saying, I want you to be in relationship with me so I can win a debate. I want you to be in relationship with me so that I can defend my truth and I can defend the way that I see the world is right. No, he is ultimately gracious in the way that he talks about truth. He doesn't tell you the truth to prove you wrong. He doesn't tell me the truth to make me feel stupid about myself. He tells me the truth because he wants life for me. He doesn't want me to live this life where I am living out true lies and I'm just enslaved. So how do we run this litmus test, right? Like, how do I know? Like, am I living captive to sin? Am I living captive to the lies? How do I know if I'm really free? Here are just three questions that we can ask ourselves. Am I tirelessly working for approval? Am I just tirelessly trying to impress the people around me, thinking that's what's going to make me feel free? I'm not secure, am I? I never feel grounded. I never feel rooted. I'm not free, am I? I'm totally bound by other people's opinions of me. If my answer to that question is yes, then no, I'm not free. Am I chasing success when I know that it never satisfies me? Ask any professional athlete who's reached the pinnacle of their sport. What do they always say? They're like, not satisfied yet. And it's fine if you're not satisfied yet in your job because you want to continue to improve, but what if that's about your life? I'm not satisfied yet because I haven't accomplished enough in my career. I haven't accomplished enough as a parent. I haven't accomplished enough in fill in the blank, whatever it might be. I'm not satisfied because success will never satisfy me. Work hard in your job, but do not chase that success in order to satisfy you. That's not the life of a free person, because you will be chasing something that you'll never actually have. Satisfaction in the success of a career or a vocation. The third question we can ask ourselves is, do I claim independence, but I'm still answering to fears and addiction? I'm independent. I do whatever I want, but what am I really doing? Maybe it's the things I don't tell people. I'm doing certain things because I'm actually just afraid of those people. I claim independence and I claim my own space and my own ground and my own territory because this is mine and I'm secure. This is mine. If I'm so secure, why am I just building up everything in the world so that I can just keep everybody else out? And why am I trying to keep them out? Maybe just because I'm afraid of them. I'm not free. I'm afraid. And maybe for some of us, it gets so bad, like, oh, no, I need to be okay. I need to be free. I need to be fine. And so we seek freedom in numbing devices that we become addicted to. I'm not free. I'm bound by a chemical, by a drug, by a drink. I have to have this. I'm not free. But you have a God. You have a Savior who says this, to even the people who the rest of the world would say that those should be your enemies. What did he say to the religious teachers? The ones who hated Jesus, the ones who were conspiring his death? He said, if the Son sets you free, you are truly free. He's offering them his grace. He's offering them freedom. He's not defensive about it. He's just lovingly inviting about it. Jesus stands on this. He will not abandon this approach to truth, the loving approach to truth. Even in the seemingly lowest point of his life, he is on trial. And John brings up the word truth again. And Jesus is having a conversation with the person who seems more powerful than anybody else in the entire society for Jesus. Jesus is on trial for his life, and he's talking to Pontius Pilate. And Pontius Pilate has the power to put Jesus to death. Pontius Pilate is having this conversation. It's going back and forth with Jesus. And if you read it in John chapter 18, you'll find something pretty interesting. Pontius Pilate has all of the riches and all of the crowns and all of the worldly power to make it look like he's in charge. And yet, if you read this conversation, Pontius Pilate is squirming in front of Jesus. Are you a king? Jesus says, who told you I'm a king? Are you asking that I'm a king? Well, your people brought you before me. What's the wrong thing that you've done? What do you say that I've done? Jesus is totally calm. He's not defensive. He's secure in the truth. And Pontius Pilate is giving him all sorts of opportunities to free himself, worldly speaking, to free himself from the physical chains that he is being held in at this very moment. Pontius Pilate is like, don't you realize I can free you? And Jesus is like, you can't free me. The truth is freedom, and I am the truth. And Pontius Pilate responds to Jesus and says, what's truth? What is it? It's interesting. Pilate asks a question that maybe sometimes we're asking to sidestep. Like, come on, what's really truth? How can you really define it? And I think that maybe that's how Pilate asked it. I think that's maybe how we ask it sometimes. But maybe there are also times where we're just like, no, seriously, please tell me. Is there a rock at the bottom of the universe? Is there real truth? And would that truth still face me with all of my lies, with all of my inadequacies? Because here in front of Jesus, you have Pontius Pilate, the most powerful man in his society, the governor over all these people. And he's looking at Jesus, and he's squirming. He's like, don't you understand my role? Don't you know what I can do? And she's like, I'm good. And he's looking at Jesus. He says, what is it? Tell me, what is truth? And the crazy thing about all of this is when Jesus has every single opportunity to free himself, again, he doesn't defend himself. So what does that mean? It means that maybe you're going out and you're having conversations with people about your faith. You'd really like them to come to church with you. You'd really like them to start believing in Jesus. Maybe you have a family member. You love them so much and you're so scared about them. How are you going to live this life without faith? My goodness, how are you going to deal with the really hard things that we all experience without trust in Jesus? What are you doing? And you're scared for him. And because we're scared for them, and we're feeling all sorts of things, we start to get defensive, we start to get mad, maybe we start to insult them. Oh, you'll just never believe this stuff. And sometimes this is how Christians act. We get in fights as if the truth about Jesus is a debate to win rather than something to reveal. If Jesus was standing in front of Pontius Pilate and he didn't feel the need to defend himself, I think it also means that Jesus doesn't need us to defend him. We need him to save us. Like, let's not get the roles reversed here. Here's the truth. We don't need to defend Jesus. We get to reveal Jesus. We get to show Jesus. But we belong to him because he saved us. He set us free. And what does Pilate do? As he looks at Jesus in the face, and Jesus is just unshaken, immovable in this moment. Pontius Pilate, he goes and he washes his hands. I want no part of this. I can't. Some of us think, like, if I'm going to stand in the face of truth, I need to get out of it, right? But to ignore Jesus is to ignore the truth. To reject Jesus is to reject the truth. No, look at him. See him for who he really is, not how someone told you about him, maybe when they were fighting with you and arguing with you and shaming you and telling you that you weren't worthy of his love unless you follow a very strict legalistic worldview that tells you this is how you get to heaven. Just like important side note here, we don't get to heaven. Jesus brings heaven to us. And the only reason why we get to spend forever with him is because he brings us. We don't get there on our own power. We are invited by his grace. Look at what he's doing. Look at how much he loves. He is truth and he is love come together. If somebody loves me, but they won't tell me the truth, it's insincere. And I'm only signing up for a disaster again. Because if they tell me everything that I'm doing is fine, and that makes me feel good for a moment, only to know that I'm going to go out and feel broken again. It is insincere. Oh, but at the same time, if someone tells me the truth, but they don't love me, it's harshly ineffective. Why would I listen to you? Why would I trust you? Why would I go with you so I can continue to be beaten and shamed and hated? I'm just offended and feel like I have to defend myself for the rest of my life? No. What has Jesus done? The truth, not just in line with the truth, but the truth embodied, truth himself, logos, the word of God. He looks at us and he tells us the full truth about ourselves, and he loves us entirely still. He will not be shaken from it. We know some of the truth about God. We know enough of the truth about God because it's been revealed to us through Scripture. Jesus is the way. He is the truth. He is the life. Nobody gets to the Father except through him. We know that much. But in the grand scheme of the infinite God, my goodness, how much do we actually know about him? Good thing we'll have eternity to find out. But here's the really beautiful thing. He knows everything about me. He knows my successes. He knows my failures. He knows what gets me excited. He knows what breaks my heart. He knows where I'm doing well in life, where I'm helping people, where I'm serving, where I'm caring. And he also knows the spaces in my life where I'm taking, and I'm consuming, and I'm fighting, and I'm really just insecure. He knows all the different places where he's working through me, and he also knows these places where he knows he's going to have to save me from them. And gladly, he knows about all of it and loves me anyway. He knows everything about me, including what I really need. The truth. Him. We need him. So as Christians, how do we live lovingly true? Like, how do we do it? How do we follow this example of Jesus? How do we live out the truth in the way that he did, the way that he loves you and the way that he loves me, the God who can see everything but love us fully anyway? We get to do these things. One, we get to hold to Jesus' teaching. When Jesus says, obey my commands. If you obey my commands, you're my disciple. And you're following the truth, and the truth sets you free. When he says that word hold, when he says remain in, it's this word meno. It's not a, hey, just go ahead and check this out every now and then. It's live in it. Stay in it. Engage with God's word. Talk with other Christians about your faith. Have them help you. Welcome them in. Let them see the truth about you. Remain in Jesus' teaching. The teaching that says there are parts of our lives that need to change for our sake and for the sake of the world. And yet, we are loved. Remain there. And then also, like, live in reality. Be honest about the truth. Don't be afraid of mirrors. Look in them. I have flaws. I have things that need to be worked out. Live in reality. But then, of course, live freely. And how did Jesus express freedom? Jesus was the least consumer person of all time. His entire life was dedicated to serve, to love, and to save. And he was totally free. We tell ourselves, I will finally be free once I have everything that I want. And Jesus experienced full freedom when he emptied himself. So Christians, let us follow him. Let us live out the freedom that says, you could take everything from me, world, and I would still have life. I would still have it all because I'd still have the truth, because I'd still have Jesus. May we live with that kind of freedom so that we could walk into others' lives. And rather than attacking their feelings or their emotions or how they're interpreting truth, we could be so secure in who Jesus is, in the truth about God, that we can listen. We can ask honest and fair questions, and they would know they love me. They care about me. They want life for me. And I don't know where it goes after that, but I trust Jesus with it. I don't know, but like, what if we had that conversation? Then at the end of the conversation, the person's still living in sin. This side of heaven, they still will be living in sin. They just will. But I promise you, the one sin that you think you can pull out of their life, you can't. But Jesus can save them. Jesus can love them. I don't know. What if at the end of this conversation, they're still doing that thing? Let Jesus have his way. And how can I let Jesus have his way? I get out of the way. And I just let the abundance of his love and his truth pour over them. He is so loving that he tells us the truth. Let's be so secure in who Jesus is that we trust that whatever transformation he wants in their life, we'd be willing to advocate for it, but also whatever trust he wants in their life, we'd be willing to let it happen because we're like, you know, it's not my agenda anymore. Let's live with that kind of freedom. Let's share the truth with that kind of love. Remain in him. He is the truth, and he is the truth that sets us free. That's the truth. Amen. Let's stand, let's sing, and we'll head home.